Hi, this is Lindsay Isaacs, Managing Editor for American City and County Magazine, and I'm speaking today with Mary Lou Goodyear, who's the Director of the University of Kansas School of Public Affairs and Administration. Thanks for joining me today, Mary Lou.
I'm honored to be here.
Well, I wonder if you could start off and tell us why the University of Kansas started studying the factors that contribute to successful public-private partnerships.
Our program specializes in local government. Our master's program is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report. And one of the things that we consistently try to do is stay in contact with our alumni. And also many of our students are out doing internships across local state governments. And about 5 years ago, we began to get this real consistent feedback that more and more and more the focus of a city manager or an agency head in a state agency was really less internal management and more really understanding needs and the broader aspect of governmental service, and then taking a look at the question, is this better done internally? Is it better done externally? Can we partner with someone who has expertise or who can take advantage of volume in order to deliver these services? And so we saw that as a major trend, particularly in local government, but a trend in government overall, to partner, to contract out, to band together. Even there's, I think, been a pretty big growth in government-to-government collaboration. And so we really saw the relationships between government and the private sector changing in kind of a fundamental way, in that governments really believe that there are some aspects of what they do that are inherently governmental and that government employees should be doing them. But there's this whole raft, as Rick noted, of services that can be better done in partnerships.
Hmm. All right. Well, what professional and personal skills should public officials and organizational leaders have to successfully manage public-private partnerships?
One of our faculty members, Heather Taylor, has done some great work in this area about what are the competencies that people need to really be successful leaders in collaborative environments. And so that's any environment where there's more than one organization or unit trying to accomplish something together. And she's done research both in the Department of Homeland Security and then more recently in the state of Kansas. We did a data sharing study, and we were trying to figure out what makes successful leaders who are trying to do things in a collaborative way. And she really came up with four competencies. The first is an interpersonal understanding competency, so those just kind of basic interpersonal skills, demonstrating empathy for others, understanding where motivations coming from is a really important aspect. Teamwork and cooperation, you would expect, would be one of those competencies. And in that teamwork and cooperation, one of the key points was being able to look at, as you're working together in a partnership, giving the other a group credit, you know, for being altruistic about the fact that we're accomplishing this together, not being so focused on one unit or the other. So it's more that teamwork aspect. The third one was team leadership, and a really important aspect of that is building diversity into the project, so really looking at the ways in which we're going to work together, and in particular understanding what's your strength, what's my strength, how can we put those strengths together and accomplish something better. And Rick gave several examples where the private sector has strengths already that government can take advantage of, and so that's it's a leader really being able to strategically think about that and take advantage of that. And then the last one that we found is really being able to be flexible and adapt to a situation, and we've certainly seen a lot of that in the partnerships that we studied at our school, that ability to start out in one path but then see other things that could be done and other strategic partnerships that could come off of a base of a beginning partnership. And we're beginning to see that these things kind of grow and develop as the two organizations get to know each other and what their assets are.
Interesting. Are these qualities that state and local governments typically consider in their skills when they're hiring new employees?
You know, we have not done any specific work on that except for this data sharing study in the state of Kansas. And in the state of Kansas, there is, that's part of the evaluation process that, that we kind of look at that ability to be collaborative. But we found that there isn't as much emphasis on it from leaders and managers. And I think I could probably say we could generalize that in the fact that the way we do the work has changed, but I'm not sure that we really recognize that enough, and I'm not sure that we are rewarding employees enough for their collaborative projects and kind of reaching out and being innovative. And so focusing on that in reward systems and also in professional development programs, teaching some of those collaboration skill sets could be an important piece of us getting those skill sets there and preparing governmental employees to be good partners.
Now, how can they be measured and encouraged, to get these sorts of qualities from employees and managers?
Well, in human resources environments, one of the things that's becoming more and more popular are defined competencies for leadership and management. In fact, in our MPA program, we have a competency document where when the students first start their program, they rate themselves on where they are on these competency levels, and then halfway through and then at the end. And one of the things we encourage them to do is get feedback on their skill sets from lots of different people. So the internship supervisor, an alum that works with them on a project, faculty members, of course, from the classroom. We do the typical grading thing, but we also give feedback on projects that students are doing as they're developing these competencies. So I think kind of the competency-based array of staff development and education is really beginning to catch on. And I think it's pretty important for the public sector because it's a way of really quantifying and demonstrating that our staff development or education programs are going to have a specific return on investment. We've moved, a particular person from this level of the skill set up to a different level. And so I think that's going to continue to be more and more important in the future.
Interesting. Well, the communities that your department has studied that are using public-private partnerships, they've used both the formal contractual accountability and informal accountability developed over time between partners. Can you describe how both the informal and the formal accountability have been important to the success of those public-private partnerships?
Absolutely. Rick did such a great job talking about the written contract, the initial negotiations on the contract, and how understanding develops through that process, how important it is to the process. That formal process really sets up the opportunity for an informal relationship to develop and to deepen, and for more innovation to come into that relationship. One of the things that we've found as we've done some of our research is a lot of people talk about what they call unofficial expectations, and it's those things that they really did kind of expect, but they didn't think through clearly enough. They did think through their needs, and they did try to define those needs, but as the two parties begin to work together, I think they learn, oh, I could expect that. I didn't realize that was a possibility. Or sometimes also partnerships learn from the negative thing. The contractor did that. Oh, it's not what I was anticipating. But I forgot to talk about that at the front end of the relationship. So that informal accountability really does tend to develop as the relationship develops. And one of the things that we found recently with a study that we're doing on Centennial, Colorado, is that shared values are a really important part of the development of that relationship. And in that community, we found this really important aspect of customer service focus, both the city and the contractors being very, very focused on that. A real sense of integrity that comes out of a really good formal contract being written, it puts you on the basis of being honest with each other, telling each other the truth about whether the service is good or not, and working together to solve any customer service issues. It's also a real sense of those values coming forward of really being efficient. And one of the things we saw both on the contractor side and on the governmental side are both of those employees really taking the public trust as a serious concept and saying, you know, we're spending somebody else's money, so it's really important for us to be efficient and effective and keeping improving. You know, the whole concept of continuous improvement was very much there. And then the last thing that I found that was kind of interesting was that then the contractors really began to get much more involved in the community. They were participating in community events. They were taking the dollars that they do give to nonprofit organizations. They were investing those dollars back into the communities that they were serving. So there was developing this really shared value for the community as a place and as an important place to serve. And so that's some of the things that we began to see as these relationships develop.
Interesting. So are those values something the city was clear about when it was looking for its contractor, or did those develop over time?
They did develop over time. At the very beginning of the city's history when it started contracting, I don't think those were quite as explicit and clear. And they developed as they got more and more experience with contracting. Now, though, they're very, very clear, and if they're beginning to start with a new contractor, they put those right on the table from the beginning. In fact, they ask the contractor to comment on those in the RFP process. And so that city has developed its capacity to understand kind of moving from contracting to partnership. They have built that kind of more informal accountability right back into their formal accountability process into their contracting process. And it's interesting, I think there are some private sector contractors that were kind of surprised to see it there, but then immediately said, wow, that's really great, because you're not only being explicit about what your needs and expectations are for the services, but you're also being explicit about what your needs and expectations are for what kind of relationship the two of us are going to have.
Right. I would think that's very helpful. Clear the air at the beginning, at least at some point. Well, can you describe the knowledge base that the University of Kansas has been developing based on the relationships between communities and their private partners?
Yes, we have three main areas where we are researching and constantly working on. One is the competencies that I've mentioned already. Heather Taylor works in that area. A second is, and Rick mentioned several times, this aspect of trying to measure what it is that we're doing in the partnership. And so the whole aspect of performance measures and how that plays out in this venue, I think, is just getting increasingly important. And one of our faculty members, Alfred Ho, is working extensively in that area and doing studies that are not only United States-based but international-based. And so this concept of what is it that citizens really want out of their government, how can we engage and learn that from them, and then how can we design these partnerships to specifically deliver that back to say this whole concept of performance management and measurement, I think, is a pretty important area. And lastly, collaborative leadership is a real focus of Chris Sylvia, who's on our faculty, and I also do some work in that area. And that's really the concept that leadership managing internal to a unit is in many ways fundamentally different than leading a collaborative environment, a partnership where there's multiple organizations involved. And so trying to figure out what really works as far as trying to structure collaborative environments. How do you lead them from a strategic perspective? How do you ensure that innovation happens? And how do you deal with the very real aspect of politics? And Rick did a good job of putting forward some of the challenges there in dealing with the politics. And what we find is that the partnerships and collaborations that are more long-lasting have developed ways of kind of working through a lot of those kinds of issues within the partnership. And so how do the leaders work together to solve those problems is another focus of our research.
Interesting. Well, what are the next steps for the research in your school?
We have we're about ready to announce our research projects for this coming year. We're very fortunate to have a research fund funded by our partnership with CH2M Hill. And our two projects are going to focus on collaborative leadership that I just mentioned. So that will be one of our focus. And the other piece of research is going to be, I think, a really interesting piece of research, which is it will focus on what is the individual employee's motivation within their work environment. There's been a lot of work in research done in public service motivation, which is the concept that those who work for the public sector are not there for the money, but they're there to serve. They're motivated by this intrinsic rewards that they get in serving others. And so what this study is going to do is look at private sector employees who are engaged in public service work through contracting and through partnerships. So the folks that are actually doing the city work, but they're working for a private sector company. And we're going to see, is there any difference between the public service motivation of that private sector worker who's doing public work versus the governmental employee who's doing public sector work? So we think that'll be, you know, a real interesting study to see if there are differences there, if so, what might they be, and can we figure out why? And if there aren't differences, that'll be kind of an interesting result for us to see that, you know, maybe public sector work is intrinsically motivating and interesting to employees, regardless of who their actual employer is.
Interesting. Well, wonderful. Well, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for sharing with us the work that you're doing at the University of Kansas.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.